The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. This red lager is specially brewed for proud veterans across the country. For every case purchased, Budweiser will donate $1 to Fold of Honor, a nonprofit providing scholarships to families of fallen soldiers. Bud Light, please drink responsibly. Broadcasting live from the Toyota studios.
Just a bit outside. He tried the corner and missed.
On your favorite Arkansas sports talk station.
Oh, man. Radio?
Yes, talk radio.
It's so boring, man.
Okay.
Streaming live from
HitThatLine.com. I got that wood.
This.
Y'all better put him in the Heisman.
Is.
Smile.
The Morning Rush.
Am I wrong? Because I want to get it on till I die. Am I wrong? Because I want to get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Get it on till I die. Y'all remember me. Y'all remember me.
The Morning Rush is bringing you today's show from SEC Media Days in Atlanta, Georgia. Presented by Little Switzerland Cabins and Chalets, Razorback Camper Sales, Harry Robinson Buick GMC. Now, live from Radio Row at the College Football Hall of Fame, here's John Neighbors.
And welcome into the Morning Rush on this beautiful day here in the great state of Arkansas. Appreciate everybody listening in. I guess it's not the great state of Arkansas where I'm at. I'm in the great state of Georgia, still live for SEC Media Days, where it's been a lot of fun. We got to hear from Chad Morris yesterday and a lot of the players. We're going to have all that audio as well as a one-on-one interview with Chad Morris to play back for you. And Tommy, you know, it's been a great time, and now that the Arkansas Day is finally concluded, does this mean I get to come home, or do I need to stick it out here for a little longer and check out the rest of the coaches?
I've been there, and I know how you feel, because I did about 12 or 13 of these in a row, and it's weird for me to not be there again this year, because I've done it so much. But you know, someone's got to be pushing these buttons and pulling the knobs, or we'd have dead air. You know, anyway. I know how you feel. You kind of like, well, this is the main event. It's what you've covered yesterday. And a lot of times when Arkansas goes on the third day, and then not been that many years, there's been a fourth day of SEC Media Day since they expanded the league. But, yeah, I know what you're saying. And the worst is, from your standpoint, from our standpoint in our chairs, is when Arkansas goes on day one, which
yep.
hasn't happened a lot. But it's like the rest of the week is anticlimactic. So I know I understand and appreciate your perspective that the rest of the week is a little bit of a bummer or a downer, because what you came there to see, what you came there to hear, is come and gone. So now you got to find something to cling on to, and it's, you know, is that Alabama? Is that Auburn? Is it, you know, what is it you want to hear today? Because, you know, then by Thursday you're kind of out of there, because you got to fly home.
Yeah, well, for sure, it's going to be Alabama. I think that Nick Saban and him coming in is always going to be a storyline for everybody. So I'll for sure at least hang back for that. But, you know, Chad Morris got to go yesterday. And, Tommy, again, we're going to have plenty of audio and some talking points that he came up with. But just you got to watch him, too. So just your overall impression. I thought he did really well. I thought he did well overall, just for what I was expecting him to do, I should say.
I expected him to do just fine, but you never know, because these – this is different than your Baxter County Razorback Club or your Fort Smith Razorback Club meeting that you're getting up in front of 400 or 500. You're on national TV. You've been able to watch some of the other coaches in the league. You know what's going on when you're standing up there. And you know what's at stake when you're presenting yourself first and your program and all of these things to the college football world. I thought the first couple of minutes, he to me, and you tell me if I'm right or wrong, he appeared nervous for about the first 120, 150 seconds of his speech, and then I thought he settled in nicely. I thought throughout what he had to say, he dealt with a couple of things that I thought were reoccurring themes, particularly with the questions he fielded and then what he addressed in his first 5 or 6 minutes that he talked about. He talked a lot about adapting with the players he's got. He has said this before. He said it again yesterday. I'm an old high school coach, but I think he doubled down on that some more. But he also talked, John, a lot about, hey, we're going to have to adapt, and I'm going to have to use my skills as an old high school coach to adapt to the players I've got, to the offense I'm going to be able to run. And I think it's just another – he's just waving the flag once again at us that, guys, we don't have the talent yet to fully do what we want to do. He's screaming it at us, and we're not going to fully see what Arkansas will become at some point in the future this fall, and people are going to be yelling and screaming when – they don't get what they fully expect in September and October, but he's telling us now what's going to have to happen here in just a few short weeks.
Well, since you brought it up, we'll start right there. Here is what Chad Morse was referring to when he was dealing with the offense and how you have to adjust.
Offensively, Joe Kradick's our offensive coordinator, one of the bright young minds in all of college football. Offensively, we'll be fast-paced, we'll be up-tempo. We want to be a two-back run-oriented first football team, taking play-action shots down the field. But I also know this, that being a high school coach for as long as I have, sometimes you got to adapt to what you have. And so that'll be the coaching. That'll be the interesting part as this season unfolds.
He put it perfectly. Mm-hmm. That will be the interesting part.
Exactly.
Because with all what Brian Bielema has recruited, and we always talk about the transitioning of styles and everything. I know he's gone into this team and said, you know what, I have next to no pieces of offensive players that need to do what I want to do. So you know what I'm going to do? Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to them all and see what they're good at and morph it in as well as mixing it in with the stuff that I want to try to do. So you may not see the full-fledged Chad Moore's high-flying offense like everyone's expecting just because he doesn't have the pieces.
In 2013, Brett Bielema came in and really didn't try to adapt the offense to the players he had. He said, all right, we're going to be a pro-style offense, and this is what we're going to do, and we're going to run it come hell or high water. And if we don't have the players, oh, well, we're going to learn the offense, and then we'll adjust from there because I know I got plenty of leash. It's year one. And guess what? Didn't win a conference game, struggled on the road. It's a tough schedule. Really wasn't a year that you had a lot of margin for error. This year you got some games you can win, and I think Chad Morris is taking the right approach. We're going to adapt to the players we got. And I like this approach, but we need to save that clip right there, John. Keep it handy, keep it at the ready, because he's telling us right now, and I hope people are hearing exactly what he's saying, that his team is not fully equipped and ready to do exactly what this program's going to be capable of down the road. And I think it's very smart what he's saying and smart what he'll be executing or what he intends to do based on that statement is, hey, we're going to have to do some things that aren't really, you know, in our blueprint, but that's what we're going to have to do to try to win games this year.
And he may be referring to the entire offense, but I want to know if he's like specifically referring to a certain group of positions. Like, is he saying that it's more about the wide receivers, that he just doesn't have enough wide receivers? Because he also mentioned the offensive line depth and how there's not a lot there, which we all agree and understand. Oh. Or maybe he's talking about the quarterback, or is he talking about the whole offense?
Well,
I don't know.
What did he say? They want to be a two-back, run-oriented offense, right? That I think I got it word for word, right?
Yep.
And he went on later on, and you may have this clip too. He talked about tempo and how his offense is not just fast, 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 fast for 120 plays a game. That's not what Chad Moore. He wants to have multiple tempos because he believes and he knows that's what frustrates opposing defensive coordinators more than anything. Is they would rather, as he explained yesterday, they would rather you run one tempo and go really fast the entire game or really slow the entire game or really medium the entire, whatever, you just do it consistently so they can deal with it. But what Chad Morris wants to do is mix it up. And when he says, I want to be a two-back run-oriented offense, just stop right there. What do you need to be two-back run-oriented?
You need an offensive line, for one.
Bingo, bingo.
First and foremost,
so
need that offensive line.
When I heard that yesterday, first thing I thought was, well, how much two-back run-oriented can you be?
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, we're going to throw in tempo variations to that. I think they got running backs they can pull it off with. And, I mean, in the quarterback situation, I think they're going to be fine as far as trying to execute that. But I'm not sure that the offensive line is going to be able to pull all that off the way they want to do it right now.
Yeah. In fact, we will have this audio too. And when I was interviewing Chad Morris in the one-on-one, he talked about how they've had to cross-train offensive linemen on the team, which is a smart thing, and I totally get. But that just really shows you that either, A, there's no offensive line that are competent to play in the SEC on Arkansas's team right now, or two, the guys that they do have, or the amount of guys that they have, they don't get it. They're not fast enough. They're not able to make that transition. So they're having to go to different directions and just saying, hey, in case an injury happens, you may need to step in and be one of our linemen. And that's, Tommy, that is a very big red flag for what this season may hold.
Remember what Bielema was having to do year one and into year two with his tight ends? making basically Hunter Henry and A.J. Derby, and I mean, hell, he had to make A.J. Derby into a quarterback at one point, but yeah, that was a whole different reason. But remember, he was having to basically take tight ends and turn them into wide receivers and split them out wide because he didn't have wide. I mean, he was having to just do things with players to put them in positions to be successful because he didn't have enough wide receivers, so we had to use tight ends. There's going to be some of that kind of adaptation to this offense this year. But one thing I do know, Bielema went what in year one in conference?
0-8.
0-8. Did he ever get over that? I mean, did fans ever quit talking about that?
Nope.
No, he never had enough. That never went away. You thought, well, it's year one. You can get away with that in year one. I don't think Bielema ever got away with it. Fans never got over that. So I know this. Chad Morris has got to win at least one and probably two for that not to be an issue. 0-8 won't work this year, particularly when you got Vanderbilt and Ole Miss on your home schedule. Whatever you do, you got to win at least a conference game. You can't go Bielema and go 0-8 in your first year in conference play. We've seen the evidence. You can't ever erase that from the memory of the fans.
Yep, and that's the main point, man. You cannot do what Bielema did in your first year. Because it was one thing where, because if it's all hindsight, but you like look back to that Bielema team, and it's like, wait a minute, you had Trey Flowers and Chris Smith, and you had, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, and then you even on offense, you still had a couple of good running backs. They were young, but Jonathan Williams and Alex Collins, you had those guys, and a Keon Hatcher and
a young Hunter Henry,
and
A.J. Derby who's a pro. I mean, it's a pro.
Yeah, Travis Swanson was the center.
Well,
I mean,
you had some young guys on the offensive line. I mean, you had a lot of pros on the team. Now, a lot of them were in their freshman season.
Right. Yeah, and I mean, they were young, but they were talented, I guess I should say. Like, you know, that team should not have gone 0-8, is my point. They weren't a great team, but they shouldn't have gone 0-8.
The difference will be the schedule. The schedule this year versus that schedule in 13, and Bielema's first year, not even close to the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. Well, like you said, they got Ole Miss and Vanderbilt in the home schedule. I think that should set up nicely for them not going 0-8. So, but
I just know you can't because people still talked about that. Mm-hmm. Still are still talking about that. So,
we're
talking about it.
Yeah, that's right. And you're from one. If you go 4-8 last year and then you go 3-9 or something again this year, geez, try getting out of that hole.
But the thing that Morris talked about yesterday is. Being an old high school coach, knowing, hey, in high school you don't get to recruit at most places, and you have to adapt. This is the talent I got. This is what lives in my school district this year. I got to adapt to this talent. He's got to adapt to, you know, use some of those skills this year to try to figure it out. And I like hearing that. And again, he's warning all of us. He's telling all of us right now that there's going to be some issues with this year's team. He's putting it right out there in front of us. I hope people are hearing it.
I do too. And like you said, we'll have that audio on cue just to be able to play on throughout the rest of the season, because I'm sure that issue is going to come up. But we have a lot of great content. We have a lot of great audio, some interviews to play for you as well. Bill Hancock, the college football executive director, is going to be joining us, as well as Cole Kubik. There might even be a Clay Travis sighting, so we'll see how that goes there in the third hour. We're going to have it all going for you. And we got to say thank you to our SEC Media Day sponsors, Little Switzerland Cabins and Chalets, 2.5 miles north of Jasper is the perfect place to stay when visiting the Ozarks. Call Miss Red and make your reservation today at 870-446-2810 or get more details online at cabinsintheozarks.net. More of the Morning Rush coming up next. Stay with us.
The most honest sports radio show in Arkansas. The Morning Rush continues next. The Morning Rush is coming to you live from SEC Media Days. Presented by Razorback Camper Sales, Exit 1 off the bypass in Hot Springs. View their entire inventory online at RazorbackCamperSales.com. This is The Morning Rush.
All right, welcome back into The Morning Rush, broadcasting live from the radio room here at SEC Media Days in Atlanta, Georgia. It's been a fun event. We went to, last night, Tommy, went to Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the Delta Sky. I forgot exactly what it was, the Delta 360 Suite Box Presidential, hey, this is awesome type of thing.
Yeah.
Man, that was... That was really impressive.
They probably
really
couldn't even see the field from there, could you?
Yeah, well, no, you could not at all. Zero,
probably didn't have anything cold to drink. Probably nothing good to eat.
Yeah, it was trash. I honestly can't believe that. I mean, I'm leaving. I'm protesting and all that.
I saw your video that you were standing in the field and you just kind of, you know, did a panoramic, if you will, or turned in a circle inside the dome there. You looked a little lonely in there. I mean, the building was empty. You're the only person on the field there at the dome. I'm like, you looked a little lonely in there, like you're all by yourself.
Story of my life, Tommy.
I know it.
Story of my life.
Like
in a big empty stadium.
I mean,
the only thing by myself.
It was a Tuesday night, not a Friday night. I mean, that was the only deal.
Exactly. No, but it was really nice, and it was really cool, and it was something that now I can say. Because here's the thing: like I was telling some of the guys in the media last night, I'm like, when am I ever going to be in this box at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta? Never, ever again. So I got to experience it, but it was a really, really cool and awesome time, and they've really done a good job of taking care of the media here. That is for sure. Well, we got to catch up with head coach Chad Morris yesterday in a one-on-one interview, and what's funny, Tommy, is I was the very last interview that he had.
He was thrilled.
Oh, yeah, so he was just really pumped up. No, but he was really good, and he was really accommodating. Appreciate him and the SIDs really working with us on that. But we caught up with him for about 5 minutes, asked him a few questions of media days and what's been going on. So here is head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks, Chad Morris.
Just overall, the experience, it's been a long day for you, I'm sure, but just kind of go through it all and how you feeling about how everything went today.
Yeah, you know, what a great day. I mean, what a great venue. College Football Hall of Fame did a great job of setting this thing up with the SEC. Obviously, we know the standard in the SEC, and they did not disappoint. I mean, this was first class. The fans that came out, the amount of media here was just enormous. I mean, they told me there'd be a few cameras here. A few is an understatement. But it's been great. I've thoroughly enjoyed my time and getting to know a lot of people.
The three players you brought, you already talked about, you know, what they mean as far as leaderships and go, but they also have really big personalities too, and all in different ways. Can you just talk about the three guys that you brought and what they mean to the team?
Yeah, you know, Yelda Froholt, obviously an offensive lineman, is going to graduate in December, and definitely a leader. I mean, he's the leader, he's, when he speaks, people listen, and you know, so that's unique when you a guy from Denmark. To come in and be such an instrumental part of this program. Dre Greenlaw, a local young man from Fayetteville High, to be able to come in and to work himself in a position to become a leader is huge and very deserving to be here. And then Santos Ramirez, a graduate Santos Ramirez, as I always say, going to wear the graduate patch. I'm excited about him. But all three of these young men are great, great men and incredible leaders.
One of the things that when I was talking with Santos and Yelda specifically is they talked about how the mentality had to change from last year. Obviously going 4-8, you know, you got to change some things, and mentality is one of them. Just from what you've seen from that point when you took over as a head coach to now, the mentality change from your team, just what has that been like and what does that look like right now?
Well, I think it's a day-to-day process that started December the 7th when they hired me, and the day that I was introduced in that press conference of sit down, put your feet on the floor, and sit up in your chair. And from that point forward, it was going to be different. They knew it was going to be different. And they had a choice. You could either buy in or not. If you don't, you're not going to make it. And the young men that we have bought in. They're excited. They've put forth the effort. And they understand, they're understanding the process that it's going to take to be the best them they can be.
Coach, also you mentioned the offensive line and just the depth there that you're really having to work on. Maybe some cross-training some guys. What's that process like as far as the cross-training goes, and who are some of the guys that you've had to look at to maybe be a part of that?
Yeah, you know, with the cross-training of guys, which is something we did during the 15 practices in spring, and, you know, moving Shane from inside to outside, and Ty is having to play, you know, some center guard. I mean, you just have to make sure that you're balanced enough to where if you have a situation, it's you may have to make a couple of moves to get a whole field, and so it'll continue during fall camp. So we'll continue to build this roster and build the depth in that offensive line during camp.
One of the things I've talked about, and I don't know how many people think about it, but I feel like there's a lot of talent specifically on the defensive side of the ball. It's just a matter of getting it all to play together. All the guys are really excited about John Chavis and what the staff has been able to do. Just where do you think the defense is at? Because some people are really sleeping on the team in general, but especially the defense because of what they've struggled with in the past few years.
Yeah, you know the experts, the people that are making the predictions, and you know that's great. That's what this is about. These players, what they don't know is they don't know how hard these players are working. They don't know the hurt that was in these players, the hunger level that they have. And so, you know, hiring John Chavis and being able to come in and impact this defense in the way that I need it impacted, and he knows what it looks like. And he's a future Hall of Fame coach and a guy that has won at a very high level, and has placed as many players as he has in the NFL says a lot, and it demands instant credibility when he starts talking to these young men. So they're excited to learn from his wisdom and his knowledge.
Number one thing that you want to accomplish, you want to have your team on page for in fall camp entering into it.
Yeah, we've got 6 days left of the fourth quarter phase, and then we'll take a week. It will be a discretionary, and then fall camp actually starts August 3rd. I want them excited, which they are. But when we get through fall camp and into that September 1st game, that kickoff game, I want our football team to be known for toughness and to have a relentless pursuit of flowing to the football.
All right, Tommy, there's a lot to unfold there. A few things, and that was Chad Morris again from SEC Media Days yesterday. One of the things that I feel like has been a theme for him is, of course, he talks about tempo and how fast and all that, but he talks so much about mentality, about excitement, about energy, about all the stuff that does not involve X's and O's and conditioning and strength and all that. Not to say it's not important or anything, but it just makes me wonder, is that just what he looks at personally as a coach more than anything? Or is he basically trying to send a message that, hey, these are the things that I have to make sure these guys are ready for because they don't have it right now, or at least not at the level that they need to have it right now?
I think he looks at those things as fundamental building blocks for his program, for the house he's trying to build. These are the cornerstones, these are the footings, and I got to get them in right or the whole structure is not going to come out of the ground right. Is that a good analogy? I think that's kind of how he views it. That's how I hear what he is saying there is, these are some basic non-negotiables in how I'm trying to build this program, and if I don't get these three or four, this short list of things right early on, this thing's going to wobble down the road.
Yeah, I get that too, because those are the things you have to establish mostly. And, you know, we've heard a few from some of the players too, and, you know, what they're excited. They have the mentality, like the three players yesterday. Obviously, he brought them for a particular reason, but it's just, you can tell from the vibe, and again, we'll have some more audio later in the show too to really hammer this point home. But you can just tell that last year and the previous years, Santos was really big on this, saying, we didn't have a mentality. We had some guys on the team that didn't care. We had some coaches that kind of mailed it in. It was just – it was a beaten-down process to where they just – I mean, obviously, you could tell on the field and the way that they were losing games. You could tell that there was no discipline. There was no energy. There was just going through the flow and not really caring about anything. And that's been also not only just not having the major talent for Chad Morris, but I'm sure that's also been one of the biggest struggles that he's had and the obstacles he's had to overcome being the head coach so far, is just getting this team's mentality and where they want to go in the right place.
It permeates from the top, and it doesn't matter if it's a football team or a sales office or any kind of organization. If the leader, if the person in charge is giving off an air of it doesn't matter or a lack of importance or a lack of focus or attention to a situation, that's going to permeate throughout the ranks. And if you're in the offensive line room or the defensive back room or wherever it is, and the coach doesn't seem to be giving the same amount of attention or effort that they expect the players to give, then you're not going to get it. So it has to start at the top. It has to start with the coaches. You can't expect the players to give the level of effort and attention and to lay it all on the line if the coaches aren't going to lay that kind of example out there.
And, of course, I don't think more.
It sounds like last year that – the handwriting got on the wall, and the last thing we remember is the last thing we saw, and the team wasn't playing very well in November. I think the handwriting was on the wall. They knew what was coming, and people's focus started going elsewhere.
And it just makes me wonder as a head coach, because Chad Morris, you know, he would never go into detail on this because that's not something he would say or really any coach would say. But it just makes me wonder, you know, how long and how difficult of a process is that to change that? Because I'm sure it's easier for some players just to turn it on. You know, I'm sure that there were some players last year that didn't like Bielema or didn't like the coaching staff because of, you know, how that was mailed in or how it was handled. And so they were excited about a rejuvenation from Chad Morris. But I'm just wondering, how long does that take? What are the things that you have to do? You can't just sit there and talk about it and say, this is what we're going to do, because words are just words. It's like, how, as a coach and as your assistant coaches or whoever, how do you quickly and how effectively can you change that culture and get it turned around as much as possible and as quick as possible? Because we've talked about it too. Chad Morris doesn't have a lot of time,
nope,
as far as in the eyes of fans and in the eyes of the program, to just sit back and, oh, you get 5 years until you can get it going. No, you got to get it going as quickly as possible.
Got to get it going. But Chad Morris's job isn't anywhere near on the line.
No.
Arkansas is not making a change anytime soon at their own behest. So, I mean, that those kind of things, I mean, I don't want someone to misconstrue what we're saying here. That's not going to happen. But as we said 20 minutes ago, you can't go 0-8 because Bielema never got over that. Fans never quit talking about 0-8 in your first year and how long it took Bielema to win an SEC conference game. It was a conversation that never quite went away. And now, if Bielema had ever won 10 games in a year or 11 games in a year, probably that fire would have been put out. But he never did. So, I mean, winning can overcome some of those things, but that's why this year having some level, a minimal level of success, is so important.
That's right.
But you talk about when did it, you know, for you started out the question there about changing the culture and all that. I think he talked about it there in your interview. It changed day one when you came in and said, hey, sit up straight in your seat, put your feet on the floor. He said the players knew right then things were going to be different.
Yeah. And as a coach, that's the type of thing that they need. I mean, you can tell that's what they need, and even the players understand that's what they needed, and that's what the coaching staff has been able to do. But, yeah, you just compare it to other times. You know, when Bobby Petrino came in, I think it was probably the same way. Not to say that Houston Nutt, it was all in disarray when the program he left it, although it had some issues. But I'm sure, you know, Tyler may be able to allude a little more to this once we get him on. But I'm sure when Bobby came in, it was something similar where it's like, no, this is going to be different, boys. And we're going to make sure that it's different as quickly as possible. Yeah. So it might be the same way with him, too.
Absolutely. Live at SEC Media Days in Atlanta, brought to you by Little Switzerland Cabins and Chalets, 2.5 miles north of Jasper. Perfect place when visiting the Ozarks to call home base. Call Miss Red. Make your reservations, 870-446-2810. Get all the details online at cabinsintheozarks.net.
The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. This red lager is specially brewed for proud veterans across the country. For every case purchased, Budweiser will donate $1 to Fold of Honor, a nonprofit providing scholarships to families of fallen soldiers. Bud Light, please drink responsibly.
Now, live from Radio Row at the College Football Hall of Fame, here's John Neighbors.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Appreciate everybody listening in on a beautiful day here in the great state of Georgia as we are broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here in Atlanta. Appreciate everybody listening in this morning. Going to continue on our discussions with Chad Morris and a lot of the players that we got to catch up with yesterday. But right now we're going to switch it up a little bit as Cole Kubik joins us, the man from the SEC Network, also host Three Man Front. Appreciate you joining us, Cole. How are you enjoying SEC Media Day so
far,
man?
Thanks for having me, John. It's been weird. I don't know why I'm tired. I mean, I did two radio shows yesterday, but I don't feel like it's – I feel like it's still a little bit early in the week to be gassed, but I kind of am. So I don't know if it's the separation of being over in the College Football Hall of Fame and then being over here, but it's just everything's a little bit different this year. But it's definitely a nice setup. It's definitely cool. Definitely a lot of nice places to go eat. So it's been fun so far.
Yeah, it's been a nice little change. And, of course, we've been talking a lot about the Arkansas Razorbacks with Chad Morris going yesterday. You got to hear a lot from him and as well as some of the players. I saw you were talking with Yelda Furlhold yesterday as well. Just what were your overall impressions of Chad Morris and the Razorback players when they came through and some of the stuff that they said?
I'm a fan of Chad Morris, and I think his style, his system can be a good fit. It's just not going to be this year. It might not be next year. This is – Arkansas fans are going to need to be patient with this transition, because that's exactly what it's going to be, a transition. You're going from a team that utilized multiple fullbacks, multiple tight ends, H-backs, probably carried more offensive linemen on the roster that Chad Morris is going to, because he's going to carry more receivers. So you're going to have to sort of, I guess early on, manipulate your roster and try to find guys who can help you do things that maybe 5, 6, 8 years from now you're not going to be doing those things. And obviously quarterback's going to be a key component as well. He needs somebody to get the football out quickly. He needs somebody with intermediate accuracy. His team is not going to be as big and bulky as it is right now in the next few years. But you got some leadership on this team. You got some guys. I mean, some of the guys that were here yesterday, I enjoy watching Yelde play football. I mean, he's one of the better guards in the SEC. I don't know if they have enough around him to be one of the better offensive lines in the SEC this fall. But you look on the other side of the ball, Sosa's a guy who I really enjoy watching playing. McTelvin Aguim, I think he is an absolute stud on the interior of that defensive line. Dre Greenlaw is one of the better side-to-side linebackers in this league. Didn't get to see him play 100% healthy all last year. You got some guys off the edge, like Ramsey, who can do some different things. So there are a few pieces. It's just going to be a matter of how do they fit into what Chad Morris does, and how far back can Chad Morris scale what he really wants to do and still be successful.
Cole, you were an offensive line guy, and you know one of the things that's been on everyone's mind is the transition of the offensive line, of going from a Brett Bielema style to a Chad Morris style. So how do you feel like that's – how difficult of that to do that is that? Just to be able to go from something where it's a little slower, you huddled up a lot more in 1 year, and then the next year you're moving as fast as possible. Is that a pretty difficult thing for a lot of offensive linemen to maybe pick up on?
It's a little bit different. You know, my philosophy with what's going to happen here at Arkansas is, I'll tell you this, I'd much rather do what Arkansas is doing than what Tennessee is doing. So to go from a more spread-based offense to a more pro-style offense is a much more difficult task for an offensive lineman than doing it the other way around, going from more of a pro-style to more of a spread style. The reality is this offense, the last probably 2 years, maybe three, has had a real identity crisis, in my opinion. And I thought Brett did exactly what he needed to do, wanted to do early on, but then for some reason felt he needed to try to implement other parts, other pieces of other offenses, yet still have the structure, still have the blueprint, still have the foundation of what he originally brought in. It's difficult to make it work that way. I think we saw that. It obviously did not continue to grow and be an offense that needed to be what they wanted it to be. So I think the level of difficulty that this offensive line is going to be asked to do on a regular basis is not going to be as tough as what we've seen Arkansas have the past few years. So that's a good thing. Now, the tempo, the pace, the speed, that's going to be something that you have to get used to, because that's just a different type of conditioning. But it was cool talking to Yelda yesterday. He's like, listen, if I've got a three technique, I got to block the three technique. If I got a shade nose, I got to block the shade nose. And that's kind of the reality as an offensive lineman. You block the guy that's in front of you and try to keep them from making plays.
Speaking with Cole Kubik, analyst for the SEC Network, as well as the host of Three Man Front on WJOCS in Birmingham. Cole, what will keep Chad Morris from being successful at Arkansas? Because Brett Bielema, everyone thought he was going to be great. He had a great record at Wisconsin, at least better. They thought he'd be better than what it was. So what's going to keep Chad Morris from taking Arkansas to that next step?
If he's not able to recruit in Texas, which I think is one of the sort of home run aspects of this hire, his ties to high school football in the state of Texas, everyone just believes that he's going to be able to do that. That's going to happen for him. I think he still needs to continue to maybe go a little bit further and be a little bit more successful at home. There's been a couple of guys trickle out of the Little Rock Fayetteville area recently. Have to win those. Those are just must win. You know that. I know that. Everybody in the league knows that. You can't allow those guys to go other places. But he's got to recruit the state of Texas. And I think especially from a specialty position, and receivers, backs, corners, you know, the kind of speed that Texas high school football offers year in and year out, he's got to be able to bring a big portion of that to Fayetteville.
The SEC West is a brutal division, the one that Arkansas is in. But there's a lot of new faces. There's still a lot of unknown. You still got Nick Saban. You still got Gus Malzahn. But even a guy that's been around a little bit, Ed Orgeron, there's still some mystery there. Just in the next 3 or 4 years, how do you feel like the SEC West is going to look? We could probably both agree that Alabama's still going to be there on top. But the state of the division and the direction it's going, what's it going to look like in the future?
It's intriguing to think about because it appears as though Mississippi State is trending up, and they have a roster right now that – looks like they can be kind of scary in the division. If they can get explosive at wide receiver, they can compete for the division. You know, Auburn obviously looks like they're in good shape, but do they have the next quarterback after Jarrett Stidham? Malik Willis looks like he could be a guy, but not really sure. I think when you go down at what Matt Luke's doing at Ole Miss, you have to kind of be excited about it, but is the reality really that they're going to compete in the West the next 2-3 years after this year? I don't know if they're ready to do that just yet. And LSU is going to be a team that no matter what happens, if it's Ed Orgeron, if it's somebody else 2-3 years from now, and I have confidence in Orgeron that he'll figure this thing out, they're going to be back. They're going to be in the mix. There's too much talent. That school has too many resources. It means too much to the people there. They will find a way to be in the mix in the West. But I think the cast of characters, it's going to look very similar to the way it looks now. I don't see anything overly game-changing the next 3-4 years that's going to completely overhaul the SEC West. I think your big outliers would be sort of Mississippi State and LSU. What are the directions of those two head coaches? Because we kind of don't know. A&M, I think, is the giant question mark because A&M right now has a top-5 roster in this league. And if you look at what Jimbo has done, what he's done with quarterbacks, he's won a national championship in a Power 5 conference, every resource is there. Every resource is there. I kind of look at A&M the way Clemson was when Dabo took over. That thing was ready to explode. It just needed somebody to light the fuse. And maybe Jimbo's the guy that can light the fuse because the talent is going to be there in-state. They're not going to have to go too far from campus to get the guys. You've got the best facilities in the league. You got one of the best stadiums and game day atmospheres in the league. You have one of the most passionate fan bases in the league. Probably have more money going into that thing than anybody in the league. So it's everything is there. The pieces are there. The difficult part is changing the attitude, the mindset, the demeanor, the DNA, all of that. The behavior of the team, the makeup of the team is what Jimbo has to change. And that is not something that happens overnight, and it's not something that's easily done.
Last one before I let you get out of here, Cole. Just this season for the Arkansas Razorbacks, what are you expecting?
I think you'll see them be more explosive on offense. And I think they could have been explosive on offense last year. They couldn't protect the quarterback. I mean, the last 2 years, I'm literally putting these games on. You put the LSU game on, the A&M game on the last 2 years, the Auburn game on the last 2 years, and you feel sorry for the quarterback. And I'm just thinking, how is this kid still in the game? It's a testament to his toughness. But if they're going to be more explosive, the offensive line's got to take a big step. They must find ways to protect the quarterback. I don't expect them to climb out of the bottom of the division this year, but I am high on Chad Morris. I do think it was the right hire, a good hire, and one that will pay off later in his tenure.
Cole Kublik, analyst for the SEC Network, as well as host of Three Man Front on W. Jackson Birmingham. Appreciate it as always, man.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Enjoy the rest of the time in Atlanta, all right? 877-377-6963 is the number to call in. We'll have Bill Hancock on the other side of the break.
The Morning Rush is coming to you live from SEC Media Days. Presented by Harry Robinson Buick GMC, the Arkansas Time Dealer of the Year, and where you always get more for your trade. Harry Robinson Buick GMC. Harry Robinson Buick GMC, exit 11 off I-540 in Fort Smith. This is The Morning Rush.
All right, welcome back into The Morning Rush, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here in Atlanta, Georgia. I have a very special guest. The College Football Playoff Executive Director, Bill Hancock, is with me. What's going on, Bill?
John, good morning, and welcome to Eastern Time Zone.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's taken a while to get used to that, for sure. I keep getting my times all mixed up as far as scheduling goes, but it's been a great event so far. So let's just start there. We were talking a little bit off the air about, you know, the change from Hoover to now Atlanta. I think we both really like the fact that it's in Atlanta. It's been really great.
Yeah, it's great. Hoover was great. Hoover's a traditional place. I get that and understand it's going back to Hoover next year. But I salute the SEC for moving it around.
I do too.
I think they're onto something there.
Yeah, we'll see if it keeps transitioning out. Well, let's talk a little bit about the college football playoff. It's been a few years now. You've seen it still. We've seen the teams go on and exactly what they've been doing. So we get an idea of how it's been looking like so far. How do you feel about the college football playoff and just from the first few years that it's been going? Are you happy? Are you proud of what it's become and where it's at right now?
We feel very good, John. It's been a great 4 years. I think that the playoff has earned a position in the sports world that it's awesome. It's befitting of the position that college football has. Hard for me to believe we're getting ready for our fifth event this year. The selection committee processes work well. The game has become an iconic event that everybody has to watch. And, you know, a thing that's lost on people sometimes is finally we have a weekend at the end of the season where we can celebrate the game of college football. Never really had that before, not with the BCS or the things that came before the BCS. So we're very happy. Again, it's just been a great 4 years.
It's definitely improved the game of college football for many different reasons. And I'm sure the question that you get asked about and things that people bring up is, will it ever expand? Will it ever change? Just from your perspective, are those the type of conversations you guys have a lot of times, just always looking to improve, always looking to find different ways to maybe possibly change things up, maybe not here in the near future, but just looking far ahead?
There has not been any talk among the university presidents or the conference commissioners who manage the CFP about expanding. We have 8 more years to go on this contract. Probably in about 4 years, 3 maybe, we'll begin to talk about what we might want to do for the future. But the leaders of this event are very happy with the 4-team tournament. What four does is keeps the focus on the regular season. And unlike the sport that I came up in, college basketball, I was director of the Final Four for a long time before I came over here, they have the greatest March. March is awesome.
Oh, yes.
But they need a shot in the arm for November through February. And with us, we have a 4-month season. Everybody knows it going in, and the 4 months play a significant part in deciding the national champion. I think that's really, really cool.
I do, too. And even this past year, some people brought up the fact that you had 2 SEC teams in the college football championship. And, you know, some people don't like to see that. But to me, any time that you can make the regular season worth something and also make sure that the best teams are getting in the end and being the 2 teams that go at it in the national championship, that's what every sport should strive to have, is something that type of setup, because not every sport gets that.
Not every sport does the best team win the championship. You know, I can look back at the years that I managed the Final Four, and the best team didn't win the championship a lot of times. Sometimes it did, but I think in college football, the way the regular season and the postseason are joined at the hip, we have a much better chance of having the best team actually win the championship.
Okay, before I let you get out of here, just one of the things I feel like always people are bringing up too is, you know, when you have only 4 teams in there, there's always a Power 5 conference champion that may get left out. Or in this case, this past year, you had 2 Power 5 conference champions get left out, and there's always these discussions and things like that. Do you ever listen to what people, other outsiders, have to say as far as what they want? Or you guys, and they're all coming up with this, just focusing in on what you see and your analytics and all of that. Just how much do you listen to the outside world?
As far as deciding how big the field is, of course we listen. We have constituents who have different ideas, and we listen to every one of them. But when I sit down and talk to people about why do you want to expand, usually they say, well, you'll have a better chance to get the right teams. That's just not true, because if we had 8, then Team 9 would be disappointed. Mm-hmm. Team 17, Team 30, 33, and in the NCAA tournament now, Team 69. That goes with the territory. So if you ever try to expand, don't do it for that reason, because you would fail.
Absolutely. Bill Hancock, the executive director of the College Football Playoff, really appreciate you joining us, Bill. I know you got to go to the big room up here, so good luck doing that. It should be a lot of fun for you.
Thank you, John, very much.
Anytime.
Take care.
Appreciate it. 877-377-6963 is the number to call in. So there you have it, Tommy.
Yeah, one of the national semifinals back in our part of the world this year, going to be in North Texas at Arlington. So that, you know, that's some regional interest this year. I know a year that, you know, Razorback fans won't be expecting to be in a game of that magnitude, but, you know, if you're a college football fan, it's within a reasonable drive to maybe see one of the biggest college football games of the year at Jerry World.
Yeah, and I think that that's –
it's back up in the rotation this year.
Yeah, which I always was hoping that if Arkansas ever had a chance to play in the championship or anything like that, it would be in Jerry World because that would be poetic justice, I believe. But, yeah, I think that that's also something that's been great because even in the BCS era, all these games were just so far away from Arkansas, you know. Never had it in Dallas, but yeah. They have it here, that's for sure. And it will be a great event for sure.
So the Cotton Bowl part of the four-team playoff this year down in Arlington.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I think December 29th is the date on that this year.
Although I think it's probably going to be the same teams, that or at least a few of the same teams.
Think Bama might be one of those teams?
I think. You know, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they probably have a good shot at it.
I know this. They're one of four teams there in Atlanta with you today. So
that's right. That's right. And we're going to be looking forward to hearing from Nick Saban and how the media is terrible at what they do. So it's going to be a lot of fun, though. But we'll get to that and a lot more on the other side of the break. Stay with us.
Morning Rush is coming to you live from SEC Media Days. Presented by Razorback Camper Sales, Exit 1 off the bypass in Hot Springs. View their entire inventory online at RazorbackCamperSales.com. This is the Morning Rush.
All right, welcome back into the Morning Rush, broadcasting live from SEC Media Days here in Atlanta, Georgia. Appreciate everybody listening in. We're going to continue our discussions of SEC Media Days as a welcome in Clay Travis of Outkick the Coverage. Clay, first off, congratulations on your new radio deal, man. That's exciting stuff.
Three more years of waking up at 4:15 a.m. I know you're up early in the morning too, but that's the biggest news there. So, but in all honesty, you know, I think it'll be exciting to keep doing it. And I think morning radio is something where people get used to whatever their patterns are, and so I hope enough people are going to be interested in hearing my voice for several more years.
Well, you've done writing, you've done video, you've been in movies. I mean, you've been all over the place. Where does radio rank among your media favorites?
I like writing the best.
Oh yeah.
Because there's nobody else there to kind of help lift you up. And so, to me, sitting in front of a blank computer screen and having to create something out of nothing and having complete control over that, which is what I do at Outkick, the coverage and with the books and whatnot, I think that's my favorite. So I would give it up last. It's also the hardest. Mm-hmm. I think radio is second. TV is the easiest. Right, like radio, you sit down. I talk for 3 hours every morning and host a solo show. You know, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do.
Right,
but every discipline is a little bit different, and I think there's a reason. I always say why people go from you see people go from writing to radio to TV. Like that's a career trajectory that some people can follow. You see very few go TV, radio to writing, and I think that's because they get progressively easier as you move to TV, progressively more difficult as you move down from TV.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. And I know you're a big Tennessee guy. They're going today. Jeremy Pruitt, the new head coach there. Yeah, I feel like, and I don't want to offend you anyway, but we were here in Arkansas, and I feel like there's a lot of comparable aspects to what Arkansas has gone through and what Tennessee has gone through. They have new coaches. They had bad experiences with their previous coaches. Just Tennessee, Jeremy Pruitt, how are you feeling about them and the future that they're going to?
I don't know. I mean, I think that there is the most uncertainty probably about how Jeremy Pruitt will do, and we won't find out the answer until September, right? And I think that's a tough opener for Tennessee against West Virginia. Then they'll get two wins, and then they have a game that to me is the kind of the circle point game for them, which is Florida, because Tennessee's schedule is brutal. The opening with West Virginia is not easy, and I think West Virginia will beat them. Will Greer's a very accomplished quarterback, but Tennessee's a decent team. They'll win two, and then they've got, and I may mess this up a little bit, but they have Florida. They have got, I believe, Auburn. They've got Georgia, and they've got Alabama back to back to back. So in some order, those four. And that's kind of the linchpin part of the season where it's just a brutal run. And they start with Florida, and that game is in Knoxville. In the last 4 or 5 years, that game's been relatively even. Tennessee's only won one of them. They could have won all of them. They could have lost all of them. But that's a 50-50 game. And so I think Florida will be favored in that game, but I don't think they'll be a massive favorite. And so the question I would have surrounding that that contest is Tennessee going to be able to get a win there? If they did, it's a signature win in year one for Jeremy Pruitt. It would go a long way towards handling what will be a brutal stretch against Auburn, Georgia, and certainly Alabama. And I don't know the answer, but that's kind of the game that I would circle. I think Tennessee's goal is to go 6-6. You know, 7-5 is probably the ceiling. I think 5-7 is probably the floor, honestly. And you know, there's a big difference between 5-7 and 7-5, but ultimately it comes down to, do you win two close games or not?
We got Clay Travis of Outkick the Coverage right now on the show this morning. Clay, tell me about this. You're also writing a book, or have come out with a book. It's called Republicans Buy Sneakers Too. Of course, anyone who follows you, you know that you are all over the place as far as what you cover, what you talk about, and all that. So just give us a little idea of what this book's about and what made you decide to do something
like
this.
Well, it's funny. It's a Michael Jordan quote that was attributed to him when he was asked why he didn't get political, why he wasn't aggressively commenting on the O.J. Simpson case or the Rodney King L.A. riot situation. And he said, the report has been that he said Republicans buy sneakers too. And it's 100% true. And I think what sports in most of my youth, and I didn't live in the 1960s, I didn't live in the 1950s or any of that time, sports for most of my youth was a place that united us in the 1980s, the 1990s, the early 2000s. And athletes were not very often political. And I always think that's a good advice. My grandma, born and raised in the South, told me at a young age, and I'm sure a lot of other people have heard this too, you don't talk about religion and politics, and because it's a way to divide people. And those are two subjects that it's typically good to avoid. And so I think that's probably true in general in the world of sports. And instead of that, we have ended up in an era where I think social media has encouraged athletes to share every possible opinion they have in the world, including all their political beliefs. And as a result, I think a lot of the coverage in the media and a lot of the leagues and everything else have moved in such a aggressive fashion into the political realm that they've alienated a lot of their viewership. And I think that's one reason the NFL ratings are down 20%. I think college football, thankfully, has a lot of that has been immune to it because they haven't had the controversy surrounding the anthem or anything else. But for me, sports has always been described as a toy chest of life. I think it's where people go to escape serious things in their life. And when you make sports just like politics, where we're basically in a 50-50 country, you can like Arkansas Razorback football or you cannot like Arkansas Razorback football. I know in your state. But it unites you whether you're a neurosurgeon or you're a janitor. Everybody's got an opinion on the Razorbacks, and the Hogs are being called by everybody. And I think that's good. You know, I think it's good when you win a game that you don't think about who the guy or the girl that you're high-fiving with, what they think about, you know, transgender bathroom laws, right? Yeah. Like, I mean, it is a uniting force, race, religion, ethnicity, religion, sexual orientation. All that stuff disappears when you're rooting for the same team. And I think we need more of that. And really sort of kind of the thesis of the book is that sports gets it right. You know, the best guy gets the job. The best guy or the best girl starts. You know, and I think that's a uniquely American concept, having aggressive competition and the best person wins. And I think we have lost that a little bit when we turn sports into politics by any other name.
We got just about a minute, so real quick, something you talked about, and we're putting it on Twitter, the Razorback baseball team, which was the College World Series, and they were a foul ball catch away from winning it all. You brought up the whole question of what was worse, the 98 fumble against Tennessee in football or the baseball. What did you think of between those two? Which was worse for you?
It's interesting. The voters in my poll went with baseball.
Yeah.
And I think it's an interesting question because, to me, the challenge is football is so much bigger than baseball, but you definitely had a championship in baseball if you made the play, whereas if Sterner, you know, the fumble happens, then it doesn't happen. You still have to play Tennessee again probably in the SEC title game.
Yeah, it was a heartbreaker for Razorback fans for sure, but, you know, they've gotten used to it by this point in time, so it was a tough one. Clay Travis of Outkick the Coverage, really appreciate it, man.
Appreciate y'all having me. Thanks a lot.
Congrats on the new deal, and we'll be catching up with you soon, my friend.
For sure.
More of the Morning Rush coming up next. Stay with us, folks.
The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. This red lager is specially brewed for proud veterans across the country. For every case purchased, Budweiser will donate $1 to Fold of Honor, a nonprofit providing scholarships to families of fallen soldiers. Bud Light, please drink responsibly.